asked to talk a bit about what physicians and public health professionals can be doing regarding these issues. And so I just, because I'm leading off, I want to give a little bit of background on the concerns that we have and the scope of these concerns. And some of this is going to be a review for many of you, but my premise is to start is that catastrophic climate change, which I will define for you in a second, to avoid that, we have to achieve dramatic reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in the next decade. Catastrophic climate change will be catastrophic. I don't want to contribute to the usual apocalyptic environmentalism that we're familiar with, but I have a great deal of concern about what catastrophic climate change actually means. Convergent catastrophes or challenges will greatly impede some of these efforts and encourage others that will make matters worse, and I'm going to tell you a bit about that. So we're faced with the need to make changes on multiple fronts, and what I want to talk about today is how behavior change is relatively low-hanging fruit, is morally motivated, and shouldn't be tackled first. And if we could talk about the behaviors that are contributing to these problems, then politicians, business leaders, and policymakers may follow. So a group of us in Environmental Health Perspectives in December of 2006 wrote this article on global environmental change, what can healthcare providers and the environmental health community do about it now. And we wrote in a sentence that a reviewer said they liked and was well written but had no place in environmental health perspectives. They said, despite a broad scientific consensus that environmental degradation is caused by humans and will impact human health globally, very few exurb dwelling, McMansion living, large lawn watering, SUV driving, 100-mile-a-day commuting, endangered species consuming, therapeutic shopping Americans acknowledge that their behaviors and the policies allowing or encouraging these behaviors may be implicated and in need of change. So I wanted to just start out with the notion of behaviors or lifestyles. And solving these problems will not be easy, but I think we have a missing link in all this discussion about the notion of our behaviors and responsibility for those behaviors. I think we need to reconnect this disconnect that a lot of us have. We can go about our lives and sacrifice if you really like our current lifestyles, or just change may be required. And some of the new future would look a lot better than what we're faced with now. So the change actually might look really good. But another premise is that I do not think there is an energy regime that replaces the one that we're leaving, which I'll tell you about in a second, that will allow us to continue living exactly the way we're living now while avoiding climate change. So why else focus on lifestyle? While we all say we claim we care about the environment and future generations, we are certainly not behaving that way. Our global environmental threats are not just about greenhouse gases. We must decrease our carbon footprints and our ecological footprints, and I'm going to tell you a bit more about this in a second. So here's the CO2 emissions in 2002 by country. And the United States emitted 20 tons per person. We're about twice the high-income country average, about five times the world average, and about 20 times the low-income average. And this is just in 2002. As the Chinese say, the United States got wealthy by emitting this kind of carbon over 150 years. So we're way ahead if you look at the cumulative numbers, not just the annual numbers. James Hansen and others talk about catastrophic climate change, and they say catastrophic climate change has these three features. He says if we do not get off of the business-as-usual trajectory in, he said, 10 years, 3 years ago, so we have seven more years to do this, that sea level rise leading to the displacement of human populations that could number in the hundreds of millions, extinction of 50% of plant and animal species, and regional climate change with a large impact on food production and the hydrologic cycle. So this is what we're trying to avoid. We have 7 years to do it. On top of that, there's a large literature on converging catastrophes. James Howard Kunstler calls this converging catastrophes. At George Washington University last month, there was the triple crisis. And this has been put in a number of different terms, but most people say that the triple crisis includes climate change, what's been called after-peak oil, And then the triple crisis put the third one in terms of ecosystem degradation and species losses. But I think we have a number of other converging catastrophes. We have the wrong built environment. This built environment is designed to work with automobiles, and automobiles are limiting a number of choices for us. We have huge federal budget deficits. We have about a $7 trillion deficit. And when you talk about things like carbon capture and storage and other things, we're talking about probably needing to invest tens of billions of dollars of years per year for a decade just to figure out if we can rely on that method. So huge federal budget deficits are another challenge for us. And then we have political obstacles, paralysis, incivility in our public debate, and influence of special interests in the system in this country, making all these problems very difficult to solve. So what is after peak oil? This is M. King Hubbert, a geophysicist. He made a startling prediction in 1949 that the fossil fuel era would be of very short duration. In 1956, he predicted that U.S. oil production would peak in 1970. He was scoffed at. He was exactly correct. And after 1970, other countries in the world were able to control production and thus control prices, and that's when we lost the ability to do that, was in 1970. But in 1968, he predicted that world oil production would peak between 2000 and 2005. And so there's a large literature of books on these topics. I don't know how many of you are familiar with this literature, but Howie and I were talking about how we spent a year reading all these books over the past year or 18 months. Twilight in the Desert by Matt Simmons, The Coming Saudi Oil Shock in the World Economy. Kenneth DeFays has written a couple of books, Beyond Oil, Hubbert's Peak. Some of the subtitles to these books you probably can't see, but for example, Richard Heinberg's book, The Party's Over, says Oil War and the Fate of Industrial Societies, The Coming Economic Collapse, How You Can Thrive When Oil Costs $200 a Barrel. We're halfway there. We're at about $100 a barrel now. The End of Oil, Eating Fossil Fuels, Oil Food and the Coming Crisis in Agriculture. And then finally, this is a Kunstler's book, which is makes for very scary sorts of reading, but that has been very influential on my hyper-paranoid kind of view of the world. So what can healthcare professionals do about this? This is what I was asked to think about, and the idea that is that broad and deep social change will be necessary. Healthcare providers understand behaviors. We're trying to change behaviors in our patients all the time. At the same time, many healthcare providers are those SUV-driving, McMansion-living, exurb-dwelling people, so we could lead by example if we can convince each other that these are problems we need to deal with. Healthcare providers can also be involved in several adaptation and preparedness initiatives. I think Howie will talk more about this, and we could also be involved with mitigation behaviors. We live in a cynical world, but patients, Americans trust their doctors. These are old data from the American Academy of Family Physicians. I couldn't find anything more recent. I think that business leaders in yellow, Congress in the light blue to the right, we know the congressional numbers are much lower than that now, but the doctors, 80% of Americans, still trust the information they get from their doctors. So if doctors are changing their own behaviors and talking to their patients about behaviors that are not sustainable, I think we have a potential impact to change them. Mitigation is a term used by the IPCC. It's anthropogenic intervention to limit or reduce greenhouse gas emissions or enhance sinks. What can healthcare professionals do about these? We should understand the issues. We have to understand that when they're talking about clean coal, there ain't no such thing as clean coal. We have to change our own behaviors. We have to implement green clinical practices in our offices. We have to work on the huge ecological footprints of hospitals. We have to advocate for public health and get involved with our professional organizations. And we can discuss these issues with patients. And the challenge is, can we get people to think about driving from their McMansion in York, Pennsylvania to Baltimore, a 50-mile commute each way, in the same terms as smoking cigarettes and eating Big Macs? We've been thinking about how tools can assist in these behaviors change, and the idea that we could put carbon footprint calculators and ecological footprint calculators in doctors' offices. and let patients administer this. This would give them a message from their healthcare provider that the doctor cares about these things. And the behaviors are things like deciding where we live and how we get to work and how we heat and cool our house, electricity use behaviors, eating behaviors such as eating lower on the food chain and eating locally, water use behaviors, recreation behaviors, leisure travel and tourism behaviors are all things that we should be talking to our patients about. Adaptation is another IPCC term, which is adjustment in ecological, social, or economic systems in response to actual or expected climatic stimuli and their effects. We need to do these regardless because of momentum in the climate system, but I kind of feel like this is a bit of the Dr. Strangelove strategy, the movie in 1964, How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. That's Slim Pickens who rode the bomb down at the end of that movie. Tim Flannery and others have worried that adaptation has a genocidal meaning and that a cosseted wealthy few may survive climate change by retreating to some refuge, but the vast majority will inevitably perish, as will the bulk of the Earth's species and ecosystems. But these are a number of adaptations in which healthcare professionals could become engaged, summarized in the Annals of Internal Medicine just this year. I think we'll hear about a number of these throughout the presentation this morning. Finally, physicians can get involved in advocating for change through professional organizations. The World Medical Association, the California Medical Association, the American College of Preventive Medicine, all in the past couple of years have talked about how physicians can advocate for change and how these organizations are getting behind these proposals. So if you read the After Peak Oil literature, it talks about what the future must look like, and it's going to have to be locally based, decentralized, downscaled, low energy, resource conserving, with radically reorganized food production and perhaps dietary habits, based on international cooperation, and without a huge energy subsidy, many of these behaviors will by necessity change, becoming more sustainable but very different than they currently are. So given climate change, after peak oil, other resource depletion, land degradation, water quality and quantity, species losses, do we really think our lifestyles are sustainable? If not, why isn't anyone talking to us about this? An early focus on behaviors is an important first step. It's morally motivated, it's linked to responsibility, and healthcare providers can play an important role. We talk to patients about behaviors all the time. Healthcare providers can promote both mitigation, adaptation for climate change. We can act within and outside traditional boundaries. And the end result of these efforts to reorganize the way we live will have many health benefits. It will just look very different than it is now. And then I thank you for your time.